Welcome to Philosophy Club, where lifelong friends discuss life's questions.
Let's do it.
Logan.
Benjamin Benben, welcome. How are you?
I am doing quite well, sir. How about yourself?
Excellent. Excellent. I'm finishing up making some pasta, so that may come up later. But you got any throwaway topics? Want to wait for Mike?
Do I have any throwaway topics all the way from Mike? Let me check the doc.
Check my note. Oh, actually, I got one. How do you choose what to read? I've talked about this before.
I've talked about this before, but I would be happy to revisit it.
Yeah, how do you choose what to read?
This is an open problem that I continue to have. My method right now largely revolves around things I hear during interviews, something I found interesting. I also use aggregation sites like Goodreads or even the reviews on Amazon quite a lot, just to get a sense of how good a book might be. And then I'm trying to get better about just not finishing books if they're not good, which
a
much higher throughput, but it's still an open problem. So if you've got suggestions or ideas.
I don't have anything offhand, but welcome. How do you?
What's up, guys? What are you talking about?
Well, you literally just asked how we decide what to read. Ben said, it's an open problem, but he regularly consults Goodreads and Amazon reviews.
Oh,
he's trying to get better about not finishing bad books.
I caught that.
So what do you do? Besides, I guess a lot of it is probably mandated. You just read what your professors tell you to read, actually.
Yeah, that's definitely the bulk of my reading. I feel like most of what I read is just based off of recommendations from friends, or sometimes I'll go to a bookstore or a library and just see something that kind of piques my interest.
You'll just go into a store and blindly say, hey, that cover kind of looks interesting.
Yeah, I will. Maybe,
and look, I know a lot of people do this. That's normal behavior, but that's always blown my mind.
One that I did that to, actually, I haven't made much progress in, but I'm trying to get through. It's called Nostromo by Joseph Conrad. I was in the library. I had never heard of it before, but the book looked cool, and I know he's a respected author, so I was like, oh, this. I read the back, you know, the plot of something taking place in South America and some business venture. I was like, oh, kind of sounds interesting. Give it a shot. But yeah, I definitely just judge it by its cover.
How much effort are you willing to put into a book that you're not resonating with? Are you one of those people that forces yourself to finish a book that you start? Or are you...
I've been probably through like 10 books that I have not finished, that I've started and not finished. I think I give it maybe like 50 to 100 pages. And if I'm not liking it, or I just can't keep up the momentum, I'll just stop. What about you?
I'm not great about this. I tend to try and finish books that I start. But it's kind of like you said, books don't tend to change that drastically between page 50 and the end of the book.
Mm.
So I will get into situations where I'm on page 50, which might be 15% of the way through the book. And I'm like, we're going to trudge through.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 85% of the exact same. And I should have just stopped.
I think for me, by like around, 50 pages in, it probably comes down most of the time to the author's writing style. And like, if I'm just finding it too hard to read, then I'm like, it's not going to get better. And that's why I'm not plowing through more of it, because I'm really struggling here. And unless it's like an academic piece of writing, I don't really have the interest or motivation to like actually sit down and engage with difficult reading, like where the language is actually hard to read and understand. Like if the ideas are like challenging, that's one thing. But like if I'm actually like reading the paragraph over and over, and I'm like, wait, I'm just kind of getting confused here. Then I don't really give it much effort.
And especially as Logan was implying that I'm sure you have to do a lot of that mandated for school.
Yeah.
So if you're reading for fun.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. What are you reading right now, Ben?
What am I reading right now? I just finished a book, just came out this year. I guess journalist, I don't quite know her background, named Annie Jacobson, wrote, I don't know what you call this genre. It's like speculative fiction.
Is this nuclear?
It is nuclear war, a scenario.
Yeah. Nice.
Where she...
I haven't read it, but I've heard of it.
Yeah, it seems to be making some waves where she sort of just picks one hypothetical of North Korea launches one missile out of the blue, and the book is set up in basically 24-minute chunks. So the next three 24-minute chunks following the initial launch. And gotcha. You know, spoiler, things just don't go well for humanity.
Yeah.
What
yeah.
About you, other than that Joseph Conrad book? Or are you a kind of time kind of guy?
I am also reading this kind of, I don't want to say it's embarrassing because it sounds elitist to say it's embarrassing, but it's called Fourth Wing. And it is a fantasy fiction, kind of feels like YA almost. This was upon a recommendation of a friend who I told her that I wanted to read something with my fiance that will likely be made into a movie or series. That way we can get ahead of it. We can read the book and then we can wait and the anticipation and excitement of the film or whatever coming out. And she recommended Fourth Wing. It's a little cheesy at times, but it's fiction, fantasy. There's like dragons. I'm probably only like 20% through, but it's actually kind of refreshing how it's light, you know, it's not like super full.
You're not going over paragraphs because the language is so dense.
Yeah. It's first person. It's like very, not stream of consciousness, but like very just kind of plain English, which is nice.
Fantasy books, as you came on, I was mentioning that I tend to pick books based on, you know, Amazon or Goodreads reviews. Fantasy books always have the most inflated reviews. Fourth Wing has a 4.8 with 220,000 reviews.
Yeah, that's interesting.
What on earth?
What's a book like, I don't know, what's like a, like East of Eden or something like that? What's that? I mean, wonder how that compares.
A respectable 4.7 on Amazon.
So, all right.
You're knocking out the classics right now, though.
Yeah, Fourth Wing and East of Eden.
That's funny. So my strategy is radically different from y'all's. I basically go off of things that are on best books of all time lists. Or if I hear about it enough and I'm interested in a field, I'll just read the books that are considered the best and most timeless. Like right now, I'm reading On War by Clausewitz because I'm tired of people quoting him. Because of that, I've got a very high tolerance. Because I read things that are like on best ever lists, pretty much, I got a very high tolerance for it being rather boring or me not vibing. Like even something like Anna Karenina is great, but admittedly a little slow in the first 100 pages. But then it just gets even better and better, and it's one of the best of all time. So because it's on like the best ever list, I'll put up with a lot. And I almost never take anybody's recommendation unless my bar is much lower for stuff I can listen to on Audible, because frankly, most really great books, the great novels you can get through on Audible, but like great, but if I listened to On War, I would just get nothing out of it because it's like, it's too dense. I think if you read anything by a German author, you would get nothing out of it on Audible because it's just too dry and convoluted, all as a rule. So, I don't know. Do you all have different criteria for listen to versus read books?
Well, we can revisit that, but I actually recently put a topic in the Google Docs that is pretty much exactly what you just articulated.
Oh, really?
Maybe we can transition this into a more full-blown topic. So the question I initially posed is, what makes something a classic? I'll just read the paragraph I wrote. So I will sometimes use a list of so-called classics to inform what I read, watch, listen to, etc. These lists often have the form, the 100 greatest X of all time, where X can be films, books, TV shows, albums, etc. And truthfully, I have a somewhat mixed bag with the results. I rarely hate anything, any of the recommendations that I get from these lists, as there's often at least a baseline level of artistic technical competence that can be appreciated. But most often, I find that I simply enjoy these works in the same way that you might enjoy really any piece of art. But when viewed through the lens of a classic, I often find myself underwhelmed. When I think of what it means to be a classic, my first thought is one of the best examples humanity has ever produced of that medium. This feels implicit in many of these lists using the qualifiers like greatest, but often I feel most influential might be a more appropriate descriptor of these works. So what do you all think? What makes something a classic work?
I think my gut is the influence is probably the first, like, an important part of it. Like, Citizen Kane, considered like a classic film, I think. I don't think I've only seen it one time. When I was watching it, I wasn't like, wow, this is amazing. But when I heard, like, critics discuss its importance, I was able to, like, appreciate things. I guess I'm also not, like, really, like, aware of a lot of, like, film artistry, you know, like, stuff. So that was kind of eye-opening. I was like, wow, okay, so it did these things for the first time in, like, cinema, or the way it still told a story has been, like, copied a lot of times. But, yeah, I don't know if, like, what's the word? Almost like a hedonist pleasure that you get from the art is going to be a major factor in being a classic.
I couldn't disagree more. When Ben said
so,
that a better criteria for these would be the most influential, I immediately thought that, like, some greatest lists accidentally include most influential and label it greatest. Like, when I see Harriet Beecher Stowe's Uncle Tom's Cabin on a greatest novels list, I know that this is a bad list. That is a very influential book. It belongs probably on the top 100 most, from me, it might be the most influential novel of all time, because it started in the Civil War, or, like, you know, that's at least what Lincoln allegedly said. But it is an okay book. It's you can tell it's a first-time author. It is moderately entertaining. Regrettably, it's written in the style that it seems like everything in the United States was written in the mid-19th century. And frankly, I find a lot of Thoreau and Ralph Waldo Emerson almost unreadable. Because they just got that ridiculously flowery style. There isn't quite that bad, it's an okay book. It's not a great book. But something like The Odyssey, it's just great. It's just great all the way through. Maybe, I think part of it is on the greatest of all times list, there's an issue of translation, and frequently they're not that good. So I think that's why, because I read, I think, Pope's translation of the Odyssey in, like, high school or something, and I was like, this is okay. And then I read Fagel's in college, and I was like, wow, this is a fucking great book. I don't know what I was thinking before. And so I think that matters immensely, especially if it's poetry, may matter immensely. And that might also change why we think some books are not that great, because maybe authors who found it super influential 100 years ago and really loved them, read them in Greek or something like that and didn't have that problem of reading bad translations. But honestly, like, if it's on, like my favorite books of all time, like, you know, Brothers Karamazov, Crime and Punishment, Sound of Fury, Ulysses, Homer, The Odyssey, like, they're all on the greatest books of all times list. And I've basically never been disappointed, I think. I can't think of a really great novel that I was like, doesn't work. I don't know. Do you have a similar experience? Most people's favorite books, because I ask them a lot, because I'll usually read someone's favorite book. I guess that's another criteria. If someone tells me it's their favorite book, I would usually make the time to read it eventually, because that's not something that goes out very often. But almost always people say, they bring up, oh yeah, I read 1984 in high school. It's almost always like a book they read in high school, specifically because it's like, you know, in high school curriculums, they've been teaching greatest books ever kind of stuff. And that, if you go around and ask people, vast majority is books that they had to read in high school because there's a lot of greatest book list, and it turned out being their favorite for the rest of their lives. I don't know. Disagree?
Well, so one theory about one very cynical theory about the high school favorite book is that people don't tend to read a lot outside of school. So the books they were forced to read in high school might be some of the only books that they seriously read. That might be too cynical, but I think that explains some of it.
Yeah, I think that's got some explanatory power for sure. But I think that's still, there's still something to it. Like, even if you were to poll me, if you were to be like, hey, what's your favorite play? I might tell you Othello. And, you know, I did have to read that in high school.
Yeah, I don't know.
What do you think, Bo?
No.
Skeptic.
Gonna add to Ben's point, I think for me, sometimes reading something and then when you're able to also like discuss and study it, that enhances your appreciation of something, might make you like it more. So that could be another reason. People in school, you're forced to read it, and then you're forced to go in and talk about it, and then you think about things that you someone says something about the book that you didn't get when you read it, and that kind of opens your eyes to some of the, you know, things to like about that piece of art, which may also affect, like, okay, this must be a really good book, like all these ways to think about it. If I sit down and watch a movie by myself and then I go on about my day, unless I'm like really, it's got to really like be provocative, I feel like, to get me to think about it on my own, and or it's got to be a conversation starter to get those other perspectives on it. I don't know.
I think you're onto something there, that one of the things that makes a book much better is that you can talk to other people about it. Like how Ben, a lot of us read Catch-22 in high school. And part of the fun of that is like we can reference like Lieutenant Schwarzkopf tying his guys' arms to their sides as they march or stuff like that. Or nobody would do that to good old Orpheus or something like that. And you're like, it perpetuates, makes it more fun just because our friend group all understood it. And maybe that's part of it for like the really great books, is a large portion of people have read them. So you get that on like a broad effect. Like if I'm in a class of five people, roughly my age, you know, I would wager that one of them's read Crime and Punishment. And so that's an easy conversation I can have with somebody right there. That's always pretty good, frankly. So I think you're onto something, Bo, that being able to reference it with other people is a contributing factor to being one of the greatest of all time.
And going to the like influence point, if something is influenced, because maybe one measurement of influence is that other artists are referring back to it in some thematics, or like the character names, or in some way they're like referring to it. you get all those people who are reading this or watching this show that references some other book, and now more people are aware, or, you know, like the exposure of that, like, first thing in time becomes greater. And I think I don't know if it's deserved, but it can have an effect of enhancing the, like, perspective of that one that came first in time. A show I'm thinking of is, like, You. I don't know if you guys have ever seen this show.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
The main character, Joe, he's, like, this kind of book nerd guy, right? And there's always I can't think of the ones on. I think like Master and Margarita is one of the books that's like featured in different shots. He works at a bookstore, right? And like, there's always like kind of almost cringy, artistic shots of like classic books that he's reading or that he references and stuff like that. And I think like when you get a second piece of art, the show referencing or featuring or like noting these earlier things, it kind of, the audience of the second show looks at the first book and assumes that, oh, this must be a good thing because some other artist is referencing it. And then the collective perspective on that first thing is like, oh, that must be a classic, or that is a classic. But I don't know, whether it's influence or like the pleasure you get or just how good it is, I think when most people say about what is a classic song or book or whatever, it's that so many people know it and so many people can appreciate it, whether it's good or bad when you actually do engage with it. I don't think that's could be a bad classic. Is that possible? I don't know.
Ooh, that's a good question. Is a bad classic possible?
Like, does that just become a cult thing, like The Room, the movie The Room, you know? Is it classic? I don't know if it's classic. It's a cult classic, that's for sure.
And it is definitely bad. But no one in the right mind would call it a classic. Like, an unqualified classic.
What, isn't cult classic, isn't that the term? Or am I making that?
No, cult classic is absolutely the
is
term.
You're
spot right on with that. But no one in their right mind would confuse that, a cult classic, with an out-and-out classic, unqualified.
Yeah, I agree. Do you think the fact that there's the same word in both categories, there's something in common between The Room and The Odyssey?
I mean, for one thing, it's got a level of it. Both have a level of endurance. The Odyssey's been going on, you know, been written or composed roughly 2,700 years ago. The Room, I think it's going on 50. That's both pretty long, pretty old. And like, seriously, that is kind of old for a B film.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's a category below B, it's definitely that. But that persists. And maybe even with increasing popularity might be part of it, that the Room is definitely more popular today than when it was first released. I think it had a pretty limited, I don't remember, I think it was a pretty limited release initially. And it, like, that's part of a cult. That actually might be part of a cult. The cult part is that it's panned originally, and then other people are like, oh no, you're missing out on something. Yeah, so I guess the thing they have in common is relative endurance. Both have endured relatively long for their field, as at least compared to like the average.
I like that, endurance. Yeah.
We're still the influence of the book as a metric for calling it a classic, because it feels like at some point, actually fairly early on in a book or work of art's life cycle, there becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. So people say, I want to get into reading. I'm going to go read the classics. And they go look at a book or a list of the 100 best books of all time, and they read the top three. And then they're like, wow, that was so great, because they don't, again, going back to the not reading much outside of when you're forced to, they're not getting a chance to potentially find better books because they're only focusing in on the books that they think are going to be the classics. So then when someone asks them, what book should I read? They're just going to propagate these same classics over and over again. So how does that factor in?
So there's an ongoing scuffle about this, that we need to expand the literary canon, particularly because the argument goes, much like you're saying, that these are classics just because everybody only reads the classics primarily, and that it's principally made up of dead white male authors. So there's been a big push in the last 10 years to really expand that and be more inclusive of different category or different people of all types, which makes a lot of sense. But there is also the fact that most of the books on that we consider canonical, on the best of lists, are just much better than the average book. Every now and again.
So wait, by what metric though?
I like them much better.
I think you like them much better.
Yeah, but people who read both will be blown away by how much better they are. It's I don't think it's a new phenomenon. I think that to be in the very tippy top 1% of best books of all time, that's probably a very far right tail thing by definition. I mean, it's not like Marcel Proust was the best. I mean, he was the best, but it's not like all the books written in 1912 were on par with In Search of Lost Time. It's just that that book happened to be on that level, and it's difficult to pare books down to the best and come to a consensus about it, except for ones that happened or were written 50, 100, 200 years ago and further than that. So it's just most of the books produced today, just as true of all the books produced at any time, are really bad. Yeah,
I buy that.
Really?
So I think there's something to what you're saying of the books that survive are at least by decent proxy going to be some of the better ones. So the fact that we have centuries of books and we've pared back the quote-unquote best, there's going to be some broad filtering effect such that we're going to at least get pretty good books. My question is, if you went and looked at what books won literary prizes from last year and read them and compared them to some quote-unquote classics, what is the actual hit rate difference going to be in those books? And this is an open question that I don't quite have an answer to. This could just be a difference of taste.
That's a fair critique.
The only reason I initially brought this up is because I've found my hit rate on greatest books list to be, maybe in their defense, better than my hit rate on all books ever.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I don't want this to become a book review of individual books. But I've read quite a few classics, and there's none that I've thought, we've really hit the apex of the literary genre. I bet we could do better than that.
Well, how much do you think you have to read before you can even say that?
That's a great question.
I mean, I don't know. I even have a hard time saying that something is a bad book, unless something, I can't really, just even if I don't finish it, I don't think I'd be qualified to say this is a bad book.
Can you say, I don't like that book?
Yeah, I think you can. I think you'd say that.
Well, that's what most people mean when they say it's a bad book.
Well, I think if you say something's a bad book, it implies you're not going to like this book. You're reading that? That's a bad book. You wouldn't like that. I'm reading this. I don't like it. I'm giving up. Maybe it could be any number of reasons. Can't relate to the characters. It's too hard. I don't know. It's not hidden for whatever reason. Does it just become really too subjective? And I don't know. I don't want to turn this into some kind of aesthetics is all subjective, and then kind of, I don't know, derail the, I don't want to change the tone of the discussion.
But, like that. To talk about a book that I thought was good was Thinking Fast and Slow. And Daniel Kahneman makes the point that your mind will unconsciously substitute a difficult question or an unanswerable question for an easier question. I think Ben's read this, so he probably knows where I'm going with this. And so when I ask you, is that a good book? You might say, yes, it's a good book. But I think your mind is substituting that for an easier question. Do I like this book? Mm. And his evidence for this was, I only missed it because he usually has fun studies, is something along the lines of, if you ask people in general, on a scale of 1 to 10, how do you compare to the average driver being 5, the average score on this is like a 7. So people are like, oh, I'm above average as a driver. But if you ask them, you know, scale of 1 to 10, on average, how do you compare to the average person starting a conversation with a stranger? The average result you get is a 2. And so he thinks that people are taking the hard question of assess the driving capabilities of everyone and compare yourself to that. That's impossible. Instead, people are answering the easy question, am I a good driver? Usually it's yes, it's not that hard. Versus on the other hand, the hard question is compare your ability to start a conversation with a stranger to everyone's ability to start a conversation with a stranger. That's a very hard question. Instead, they answer with a simpler question, are you good at starting a conversation with strangers? The answer is usually no, or at least people don't think that they are and don't really like starting conversations with strangers. And so similar to this book thing, I ask you, is it a good book? You say yes, but what I know is you like this book. That's what I think.
Probably, if I didn't like it, I don't know. Maybe I'd say it's a good book. I just don't like it. I don't know. I don't know if that's probably not what a normal person would respond, though. So you're saying it's hard to make the objective statement about compare this book to all books. And it's easy for me to just say, do I like this book? Yes or no? That's the hard question is the good. The easy question is, do I like, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Okay. So, to say that whether the book is in fact answerable, whether it's good, I'm just like kind of taking a shortcut in my head. I'm evading the question, or is it, do you bring this up? Why not? So
it's like, because you brought up, I don't feel qualified to say if it's a good book.
Oh, right.
I think an adequate substitution for best books ever list would be most loved books ever. I think that would be a like perfect literal approximation of best books ever. And so it is subjective in the sense that it's subjective to any individual person, but it's not subjective in the sense that it's subject, well, I guess it still is, but it's subjective to a lot of people over a long period of time, which suggests that there are characteristics that make it more lovable and therefore better.
Wait, Logan, do you believe that? Or are you saying that as a hypothetical?
That's a good question. No, I think I'm...
Well, the reason I ask is because by that metric, I think there's a great chance that within the century, Harry Potter is the best book of all time. It is certainly the most beloved book of the past 2 decades. I think it's going to have staying power.
I mean, that's possible. Yeah, we'll check back in 500 years, see what they say. Or 100 years, I guess, would probably be adequate because we put books on that list 100 years later. But it's like, I think it has to appeal to a generation that wasn't alive when the book came out. Might be part of it, at least in like a telltale sign of it being a truly great book, because it has to resonate. Yeah, it has to resonate for a long time. If a book was immensely popular in 1610, so popular, in fact, that people call it the greatest book of all time, and no one has liked it since 1690, I would take issue with it being the greatest book of all time. I would say no matter how popular it was in 1610, it's not that good a book. I don't like it.
I'm inclined to agree with you, but that's a very populist take on art. Or is what you're saying that it's only it's not just the popular art, but the truly great art that persists?
Yeah, I would say that thing. So I don't think, I guess that is somewhat populist, but on the other hand, I guess the alternative to some kind of populist dimension is some kind of objective standard for art. And I'm pretty well convinced that even if there is an objective standard, nobody knows what it is. And quite possibly nobody can know what it is, because being objective, the subject can't know it. So I don't think I care if there are objective standards. I think there might be, but it's expressed through popularity over time.
And is popularity the number of people reading the book, the number of people giving it a thumbs up on a thumbs up, thumbs down rating system, or the number of people saying this is the greatest book ever?
What do you think it should be? Now we get to decide.
Oh, I forgot we're philosophers. That's right.
I guess first, do you think it's not populism, that there is some kind of objective standard, or a third alternative if you don't like false dilemmas?
I'm at least open to the possibility of some sort of experts getting extra weight. So again, people who read lots of books might have more to say than someone who's only read 3 books in their life.
Mm-hmm.
That seems plausible to me. So I guess that would be the third option that comes to mind.
That is kind of true. Experts have... Here's what I think. I think experts might get a longer list in my mind. So I'll read almost anybody's favorite book. If they come out and tell me that's your favorite book, I'll probably read it, because it's usually pretty good.
My favorite book is the Oxford English Dictionary.
Yeah, folks.
I don't believe you. Have you read it from artwork to...
from A to Z?
I don't know.
All right, well, so how's this? If we could hypothetically query every literate human being who has ever lived and get their favorite book, the book that has the most votes is the best book ever.
Until the next time we do the survey.
Sure, until the next time we do the survey. Like, is that the answer? Or again, do we give some extra votes to people who have read widely? Does your vote get weighted by the number of books that you've read?
Well,
normalization factor.
Let me see if I can distinguish two things here. One, if what's good is just what you love the most, doesn't your question about experts or being more widely read deserving more credit or votes, does that imply that you're able to love something, you can have more love for the thing because you have read other things? Because then the best book might come down to what order you read them in. And if I read a really good book first and then a bunch of mediocre books, I might not appreciate it as if I read a bunch of mediocre books and then I read a good book. So if the experts are going to get extra votes, is it because they have a greater capacity to appreciate and enjoy and get derive pleasure from the book? Or is it because they're more, and maybe this is a false dichotomy, I don't know, or are they just better at the technical distinctions and nuances? Are they able to see like what the author's doing? And does it even matter? I don't know. But
I mean, you're getting at something. The way I had initially conceived it was more of the latter, which is that the more you read, the more, I guess we sort of focused on books, but again, this applies to any art. The more you consume a genre of art, the more you understand that medium.
Yeah.
And are better able to judge what is done well and done poorly.
Yes, but I think part of a good thing about a great book is it appeals to a broad portion of people. And although the artistic value might be higher in Infinite Jest, the appeal to people generally is lower than many more popular books. And so an expert might weight it more highly.
Yeah.
The average person might weight it more lowly. And I think both are correct, because to an expert, the artistic value matters more, and to the average person, it matters less. And that's just a good thing to keep in mind generally. Yeah. So I don't think experts get more. What do you think, Bo?
Yeah, I don't know what the exact or what an analog would be for books, but I think about like music and maybe like a very difficult song to play that's really impressive on the piano, some crazy, you know, thing that takes years to practice and master. An expert might be able to appreciate when they hear that music, be able to say, wow, that is really good. But they listen to a song that has, you know, they listen to Let It Be, got four chords, and they're like, but that, I like that. I just like that one more. I like the average person is able to just, you know, derive more, like they both can get pleasure from the thing, but like the person's, like the expert is just, I think the only thing they become an expert at is the comparing and contrasting and like the technical appreciation for things, which now we're talking about something else though. I think when you start talking about that, like the artistry, the mechanics, the technique, whatever it is to call it, like that might affect how people, like how many things people like how much foreshadowing is, like the perfect amount of foreshadowing in a book might calculate to a percentage of love for the book, and symbolism or the right amount, whatever. But I think there's two different things we're talking about appreciating, and I don't know if when you get a list of 100 classics, which they're talking about. Are they talking about the good, the impressive technical turns, or just which way, what we like more, Let It Be, that kind of thing. I don't know. I don't know if I'm really adding anything with that comment, but
no, that makes sense. But I start to fear about a lowest common denominator effect, which maybe that's, I think I may be being far too elitist here, and that part of me is balking at the idea that if we were to run my experiment, there's a pretty good chance, you know, Harry Potter or a Harry Potter-esque book comes out on top, and maybe that's okay. I enjoyed Harry Potter; it's fun. But again,
but if we do it every year, in 100 years, it's not going to come out on top.
Right, but neither is Ulysses.
It'll always be up there.
I don't know if that's true, because I think the lists that are compiled are of bibliophiles. The 100 greatest books list are of people who are inclined to like books and have read pretty widely. The vast majority of today's populace, I think probably the populace of all time, haven't read something like Ulysses because it's too dense.
All right. Mm-hmm. So here's how we solve your survey problem, is we make the survey voluntary and unrequited. There's no reward for it. So only people who at least mildly like books are probably going to respond to the survey of what is your favorite book.
And we put it in book form. We make the survey in book form.
Every 10 years, when the census comes out, we give each census taker a little pamphlet They take down their notes in number two pencil. We collect those. We run through a Scantron. That's how we figure out what the greatest books of all time are.
What do you, Ben, what do you think genre, what role does genre play in comparing and making a best 100 list? And I guess to clarify, like, if you have 100 best of all genres, how does your process for ranking those compare to your 100 best fiction adventure books or something like that? Like when you start getting down into the genre, does the process of ranking and comparing and figuring out the best change?
That is a really good question that I need to think a little bit about. The only thing I'll maybe initially add is that the New York Times recently did a 100 best books of this century, the 21st century.
Mm-hmm.
And they were doing a little post. So they actually did a survey of lots of contemporary authors and literary critics and had them submit their 10 favorite books and then compiled it that way. And one thing they noted is that genre books were very underrepresented. The science fiction, fantasy had very few entries in the list. And you know, more memoir type books, more historical fiction was relatively overrepresented. I don't know what that means, but that's I would imagine the same thing is going to happen with something like film, where you're just not going to see a lot of horror films in the 100 greatest films of all time, even if that's potentially warranted.
Right. That actually kind of makes sense to me. The genre, like the memoirs, the historical fictions would be overrepresented. If what we're talking about is like what the average person likes the most, because that's probably, those are things that you don't really, I don't think, require an extra interest beyond just reading. Like, if you're going to go read a horror book or a sci-fi, you're probably going to have some interest in those things already. So it's like contingent on other interests of the reader. Whereas like a memoir, it's just a person telling their story. Like everyone can kind of relate to that. I don't know, maybe I'm oversimplifying, but that actually seems to track, I feel like, what we're talking about.
I would say,
I don't think that's what you actually see in the broader reading landscape. So going back to how we started this conversation, Fourth Wing on Goodreads has 1.8 million reviews, where I'm currently trying to pull up what the New York Times had as their number one book. Let's see. That has 300,000. So that has a fraction of the reader, by Goodreads review proxy, a fraction of the readership of a fantasy novel.
What is their number one book?
It is called My Brilliant Friend by Elena Ferrante.
That's interesting. Annalise really liked that book.
Well,
I'll give it a read. So part of it is, a lot of genre, I think, deliberately leans on tropes and stereotypes of the genre that make it easier to write. And often, it makes them rather irritating. And so it makes sense that they are popular, but also as a whole, generally not as good. Here's one for you that I think is kind of gets at this, is like, I was talking to Annalise yesterday and we were talking about what movie to watch. And she said, well, I really, in the course of this, I really like science fiction. I said, oh, I didn't know that. And she said, how'd you not know that? I was like, well, I know that you like War of the Worlds and Brave New World, and that you really like Dune, and that you like Star Wars, and she's like, yeah, I like all those. I like sci-fi. I'm like, yeah, but everybody likes all those. Those, that doesn't mean you like sci-fi. That just means you like good stuff. Like, those are all good and sci-fi. And, but it got me thinking, like, I would never say, oh, I really like sci-fi. I would say that I like some of those things that are sci-fi. A book can certainly be very good and sci-fi, But I definitely don't like sci-fi. It doesn't make me want to read or watch it more if I know that it's sci-fi. Do you think this is related?
Well, yeah, I think it's related because you said those are all just good things that it seems like coincidentally are sci-fi. That's just the setting of a good story. But that, you know, they're not good because they're good at doing sci-fi. And I think if you were to rank 100 best, you know, genre, 100 best sci-fi movies, you'll probably at the top, you'll get the ones that are that are good, even though they're sci-fi, or not because they're sci-fi. But then you'll start to get the ones that are like good at doing like the sci-fi tropes. I don't really know what they are, but as you said, a lot of these genres, they have certain repeated things. So that's how I think like ranking something in the genre might differ, is that you start to get more specific with the metric that becomes like kind of a technical consideration, not just is it, when you write all 100 books, is it, you know, what do we love the most? Which ones do we love the most? Where the impressive artistry and mechanics are just kind of just happen to be there. So I guess what I'm saying is once you start defining what's the 100 best, when you say 100 best sci-fi books, the act of categorizing them into the sci-fi genre, you've already put on top a lens of your metric, and that is, what is sci-fi? It's like if you were to say, what are the 100 best books? And someone says, the album insert for Rush's 2112, because there's a lot of words there and it tells a story. You're saying, that's not a book. Those are just lyrics written on paper. So you're already kind of filtering when you say what makes it a good book. It's like, is it doing the book things? Which is more than just words that tell a story.
So book is a genre of art.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you are going to start to, filter already. Just by categorizing, you're already saying what the metric is, almost. You're doing some filtering that's defining what's good and bad, I think.
That tracks, I think. Because, Plato's Republic is a great book. It's definitely not great in at all the same way as Anna Karenina or Crime and Punishment. Like, not even at all. So I think you're right that there's no getting away from the genre of it. And that makes an enormous influence. But on the other hand, should it be the case that the best sci-fi book of all time is ranked the most highly on the best book of all time list? If in like Ben's ideal scenario, if we're actually getting after both the best book and the best sci-fi book, should it be the case that the best sci-fi book is the highest ranked sci-fi book on the best book list, or is genre give something else
interesting
more important?
Yeah. Oh, that's a good question.
No.
I'm kind of inclined to think that for the sub list, you would only want to query people who like sci-fi. So maybe this again goes back to the idea that this survey is voluntary in the first place. We say, hey, we have this voluntary survey of best books. We also have this voluntary survey of best sci-fi books. You know, if you consider yourself a fan of sci-fi, maybe you want to fill out this secondary survey as well. Because I do think you're right. I actually think those would produce different results, and that the best sci-fi book wouldn't be the highest ranked sci-fi book on the best books list. I don't quite know what that means, but I do think that would be the case.
I think that implies that once you, maybe I'm repeating myself, start adding the genre, You are ranking according to certain metrics that you associate with that genre. And when you take the genre list away and it's just 100 best books, you just think, best. And then in your head, you go through all the books. There's no filter that you associate or that you're using that comes up when once you're told to do only the sci-fi books. And I don't know.
So, in an effort to make it slightly more concrete, it might be the case that
We need that.
on the sci-fi book list, a category or a thing that people are looking for is the coolness of the technology that is important to them, or like how imaginative the technology is. That is utterly unimportant to Anna Karenina, where the train gets it.
That's
Far and away the
spoilers.
most big technology in that book. That's not a spoiler unless you know it's a spoiler, Ben. And is that like an example of what you're talking about, where by that metric might change the order on a sci-fi book list? Because yeah, different criteria.
Yeah,
Um,
exactly.
or or like in a horror movie or a horror book, like it's literally the scarier, whereas like scariness itself is not an inherently good quality in a book.
Right.
Yeah.
So if it's true that when you add these extra words in the title of the list, i.e., sci-fi or horror, and you make a genre, if it's true that adding those words gets you to think about what it is that those books do, then if we start from the top, 100 best books, shouldn't we think, well, what is it the things that books do that make them really good at that book thing? Like, doesn't that mean it's not just about enjoying it, it's going to those mechanics. So we're talking about those technical, artistic things. But that's not my reaction. When I read what is the best 100 books, I'm thinking, oh, this is going to be like the list of what, I don't know, whatever X trope is for being a book. It does that really well. Is it just too broad? Is it just too general at that level?
When you put it that way.
But oh, two different rephrasings coming your way. So if we offer the survey, give us your five favorite books ever versus give us the five best books ever, you think people would give different answers? And does that matter? Sorry, I phrased it like a question. I'm making that as a statement. I think people would give different, I would give different answers if the surveys were given that way.
I think exclusively people who thought too hard about it would give different answers. Because again, I would say that your favorite book is another word of saying, or another way of saying the best book you've ever read. At least when most people say the best book I've ever read, what they mean is my favorite book. Like if I asked someone on the street, what's the best book you ever read? And they said, oh, my favorite book is Plato's Republic, I wouldn't say to them, no, you didn't understand the question. I that would be a little weird. So there might be people who answer those differently, but again, only if they think about it too much. I don't
So
know.
maybe I'm.
If I'm asked what's the best, I think I'm being asked to compare the books on like a which one is better at being a book, like. Which one is doing the book things better? And then maybe similar to like the musical thing, there's a very complex song that like that's a I don't know. It's more challenging, it's more intricate, whatever, but I just don't like it as much. I think the best you're going to account for other people's tastes when you're asked what's the best. I think
Yeah, okay.
you're gonna start considering what other people like. Because it's almost like it's an objective question. And I think most people, when they think of a, when they're asked objective questions, maybe this is similar to your thinking fast and slow point, Logan. If people are asked objective questions that they don't know the answer to, they revert to what's the universally subjective answer that people will provide. Like, we don't have the criteria for an objective best book, so the closest thing, or what some people might think equal to that, what is universally, subjectively good? And then you'll start to name, you'll start to take into other, into account other people's tastes.
Or what is universally seen as a good book?
Yeah.
In other words, okay, so now we can change up the survey. Now your answers aren't anonymous. People are going to see what you put.
Mm.
Now people are going to be judging you based on what you consider to be the best book of all time. And I guarantee you, again, people's answers are going to change. I think that actually means something. That's where the classic perpetuation comes back into play. People can be like, oh, well, no one's going to judge me if I say 1984 is the best book of all time. Even if I...
Yeah.
I actually do love that book a lot, so that might have not been a good example. But even if they hated that book, they might put it just for the social acceptance.
Yeah.
All right, so here's a weird anecdote exactly along these lines. In Russian class or whatnot, we often talked about like our favorite food, our favorite book, our favorite so-and-so, because these are common questions on the Army's oral proficiency exam, right? So they're common questions that were likely to be asked on a test. We answer them all the time in Russian to get ready for that test. In the process of this, I started trying to come up with what I should say, what were my criteria for giving my best movie of all time. And what I ended up settling on is The Shining, because it's a very good movie. It's not too old. It's not in black and white, which sets off pretentious vibes for people. And if someone's a movie lover, they'll know that it's a Stanley Kubrick film. They'll respect that director. They'll know that that's a good choice for greatest movie. But it doesn't come off as pretentious at all, because there's plenty of people who see The Shining and are like, oh, that's a pretty good movie. So I even though that's probably not it's not my favorite movie, but I think it's the best answer for my favorite movie, which is along the lines of what you're saying. If it's mutually available, like, now you've got to go through another level of game theory of like, what's the best answer for my favorite movie or book, instead of what is my favorite book?
Wow, there's so many layers there. Because you just introduced, what is a good answer to my favorite movie? We've been talking about what's a universally accepted answer for the best movie, which I think gets back to, I really like the point Bo brought up of, what do you think other people are going to think? Like, you're making a more universal statement. You're making a universal statement of your tastes, which, that's fascinating.
My tastes are already universal.
Okay, so you're saying that it's important to consider other people's, what other people tend to think is good. That's just going to bias the whole thing in terms of more popular books. Because what you're now substituting it for is a recommendation. Is, instead of what do I book I like the best, you're saying, what book, if someone random comes up to me and they ask what book they should read, what answer do I give them? That's kind of what you're substituting with your version of best book ever. And
I think that's
count. Is what recommendation do you give?
Isn't that what these lists are trying to get at? If a generic human being wants to consume a movie, here's what movie they should consume?
No, because Ulysses belongs on that list. The generic person is not going to love Ulysses.
Okay, so this gets back to the very crux of my question, is what is that distinction? So far, I think the only answer we've gotten is your tastes are that distinction.
I don't know if there's a better answer, but you're allowed to try to come up with one. Well, it goes back to what you said, Ben, is like, do experts get more votes? No, but they get one vote. Experts still get to vote. and they should vote on the books that they like the best. And that might be Ulysses or Infinite Jest or something that is unreadable for someone's first book.
So it's the fact that only experts are going to be making the 100 best books of all time?
No. If Dune is like number one, I would say I don't agree, but that's fine. It's a very popular book. People like it. Popularity is important. But being popular among people who really like books is also important. So it's not that the experts should have to think. They shouldn't have to then inhabit the mind of their imagined third-party spectator, as though it was like a moral decision. Like, what book should I recommend to an imaginary third person? What they should do is say, what book do I like the best? And then they should put that book, they should vote for that book. And then that will make sure that Ulysses is on the list. And then, you know, maybe Dune will be on there too or whatever. But like, being popular is good. Being artistic is also good. Neither makes them more bookish.
Is there a point when the experts are evaluating the book, though, on different criteria than the amateur? And then are we getting a list that is not really an accurate list because different criteria are going into ranking it, or what people vote on?
So both yes and no.
Previous book, and you're voting on the longest book.
Both yes and no. They are using the same criteria because they're answering the question, which book do I like the best? But they are different subjects. So yes, it is a different quest. It is a different, they're using different criteria because they are different subjects. So it is a subjective ranking with different subjects. So it is both the same and completely different criteria at the same time.
This is turning into a useless list.
Okay. All right. So what is the use then of a best books list?
That actually should have been our starting point.
And it might have been good. Might have saved us a lot of trouble. All right, so what is the use of the best books list?
That's what I'm... Yeah.
All right.
Giving something to do.
I would say that it is... the purpose of best books list is to recommend books to people who look for best books lists.
God damn it.
It's maybe the perfect definition of the use for the best books list.
I hate how good of a description that is.
It's definitionally...
Well, no, and I think it's actually correct. Like, going up to a person on the street who hates reading and shoving a best books list in their face is useless.
Yes.
That accomplishes nothing.
Also, a skeptic of all lists is not going to go to a list, even if they're an avid reader, to get their best book.
They might go only to mock the list.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Or people who like exclusively like to go into bookstores and just have these moments of spontaneity when they find books with interesting covers. And
yeah.
Fuck, that is actually, I think, the correct description. And that really angers me.
Yeah, so you already have to be predisposed to be a person who respects.
You have to be seeking out the best books list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's. What do we think that people are hoping to get out of that list?
Good book to read?
Yeah.
A hedonistically enjoyable book to read? A book that's going to change their perspective on life?
Okay. If we're going down this rabbit hole, I would say that a non-zero portion of what people are looking for is to find out how many of those books they've already read.
Okay. Sure.
So it has to be books that people who look at best books lists commonly read. To satisfy that amount of criteria. Because if the top 10 is books that they've never heard of. They're not going to like that.
Yeah, you're right.
Oh, God damn it.
Sorry, what was the question again? Ben, that...
What are people hoping to get out of that list?
Right. A recommended, like, I think, a good book to read. And then you ask, yeah, pleasure or the...
Let's assume...
in my mind, right, like, what they're looking for out of it.
Let's assume that the person who comes across this list is just going to start at number one and read every book they haven't read down that list.
You know, this is maybe a little cynical. I think also people might do this because it's been a while since they read a book and they want the feeling of accomplishment to know, like, to read a book. They're just like, oh, I should read a book. And they think it's a good thing to do to read a book. So they go to an easy way to find what's a good book to read and when they'll be able to finish, hopefully, because it's good. But I think people that are well-read are going to be using the list either to as a tally to see what they need to read next or to judge the list. But I think probably for a lot of people, sometimes they just want something that they will be able to get through and complete. And part of that might be the popularity of it, because knowing that other people read the book, finished it, is kind of peer pressure that you can do this, and encouragement that you can do it. Which is part of the reason, in my scenario, they went to the list in the first place, is they're like, oh, it's a good thing to do to read a book. And that we're all just basically being sheep.
Yeah, so, the good thing to not only read a book, but to read a classic.
Yeah, that it's good, and it is like you are a better person because of it, if you are able to do that.
Right, I'm...
Some people would go for that reason. Which means the books that should be on there would be books that are that someone will actually finish, and which means easy to read, moderately compelling, and not too long.
That's, have you looked at any of these lists? That's not a good description of what's on.
Not at all what they are.
Let's see what's on there.
So you'll find some though. You'll find like Pride and Prejudice, you'll find Brave New World. Pride and Prejudice is consistently in like the top 10. Great book.
Time 100 to Time Magazine.
Incredibly easy to read. Can't put it down. Then you'll also always find Plato's Republic on there, which is not only confusing often, but quite boring. Still a great book. Still get a lot out of it.
I think a lot of these, the metrics are changing as you go down the list. I think somebody starts off saying their favorite book, and then they start naming books that are respected by critics, and then they start saying books that are novel. I would be skeptical that there is an actual consistent, what do you call it, metric for some of these things. If you said Plato's Republic is there, as well as Pride and Prejudice. If those are both in the top 10, I don't think the metric, there's a consistent metric.
So it's not an unreasonable qualm to bring up that there is maybe no quality that makes up a good book besides the fact that it is a book. So when you look up best, like when you're talking about the qualities that make or like a genre good, or like better of a genre, and it's like the coolness of technology or the scariness of its scary scenes. There is no consensus for that for books, generally, because it's not a genre. It's a method of publication.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that is a bad question, is what is the best book? And it would be better to ask, what is the best novel versus the best book on political science versus the best philosophy book versus the best science book. Yeah.
I still don't know if it changed anything, but the initial question was, what makes a classic book, movie, film? So is classic different than best? I'm inclined to think very obviously yes.
Yeah, to me, when you ask a classic, that's why I think it's influence. It's something that is everybody knows. It's expected that you know it almost. Expected that you can get the references to it and
part of the human canon.
Yeah, it's part of culture. Like it to have read or be aware of the book, the art. Yeah.
Well, I guess that to me, in my mind, the only difference between a classic book versus the best book is that a classic book we must still know exists, whereas the best book hypothetically might have burned up in the Library of Alexandria, and we don't call it a classic for that reason.
Sure.
How can it be possibly the best if it doesn't exist?
Well, because it did exist and it was the best. And if we're talking about all time, that wouldn't disqualify it from being the best of all time.
Remember when you said about the book in the 1610s that everybody loved, and then by the 1690s, it hasn't been read since?
Oh, yeah, it's exactly the opposite.
Yeah.
And I think based on our... So now we're talking about best again. Based on our populist survey, I actually don't think it would be possible for a book past a certain year to even contend, because there haven't been... Sorry, to contend if it no longer exists. Because there's more people alive now who couldn't possibly have read it. Just by sheer numbers, it would have to be something that still exists.
Okay, yeah, for the sake of logical coherency, I'll take that. That we'll get rid of the, it could have been the best, but now it doesn't exist. It's a sad thought anyway. I like to think the best books are still with us. So then the difference between the best and the classics is there's an expectation that you read the classics, or an expectation that a lot of people read the classics, and there's no such expectation for the best?
I think there's some... there is some persistence component to a classic that I don't necessarily know if it exists for the best. So I might, with some degree of seriousness, say Dune 2 was the best sci-fi film, one of the best sci-fi films of all time. But I would not dare to call it a classic because it came out this year. So I don't know how it's going to age.
Is that not what you call an instant classic?
Whoa.
Oh, crap. Cult classic, instant classic. Oh, there's too many. That's a good point, but I don't have a good response to it.
It's a misnomer, an instant classic. It's an
oxymoron camp.
Yeah, it's somebody just being a little overzealous in reviewing a piece of work.
Yeah, but it's a statement that not only do I really like it, but I think it will persist, is what people mean when they say instant classic. So it is like an oxymoron, and there's a degree of not knowing, but I thought Dune 1 and 2 as a pair were a fantastic group of movies. I think it's not a bad bet to say that they'll be the classics of sci-fi in 50 years to come.
Maybe the etymology of classic can guide us here.
Man, it's a good point. We never did actually look up what classic means.
It comes from class struggle, obviously.
Etymon line, of or belonging to the highest class, approved as a model, from French classique, from Latin classicus, relating to the highest class of the Roman people, superior, of the first class. So actually, it sounds like when we're talking about what's classic,
has nothing to do with temporality.
It's superior. It's what the highest classes of the Roman people like.
So it literally is just the best.
Yeah, but I guess... Linguistically, maybe. That's the right way of saying. Okay.
Yeah, I guess using etymology, which is not how we normally play the word game or the language game.
I actually think, though, it makes sense here for the reason that we were talking about earlier about the filtering. That the reason so many old books are classic is because they have been filtered out of many other books that no longer exist. But it still feels wrong to call something that just recently came out a classic. Maybe I'm just trying to correct for a recency bias.
No, you're right. It is wrong to call something classic when it's so new. Because you're right, you don't know yet. Yeah, because there is no telling. What resonates with people of the time does not indicate that it will resonate with people of the future.
So are we ending on that lists of classics are just made for people who seek out lists of classics?
I really do think that saying it's the best book and saying it's your favorite book are fundamentally the same thing.
I had a question. Do you think it's possible that someone might answer that question, what is the best book, differently from what is the best book you ever read? Like, do you think someone might name a book, the best book that they've never read? I guess it was, is it possible?
Oh.
A smart person might say, oh, the best book is X. I've never read it, but it's the best. Everybody.
That's funny.
And do you think this would be so, like, you know, would you be able to have a conversation with this person?
I'm willing to use that in the future. Just throw out, yeah, best book ever is World is Wool and Representation. Never read it. Never tried. No idea. Heard it's great.
I mean, say someone looks up the best book, that they look up 10 best 100, top 100, and it's the same one for all 10 lists. They've never read the book. And then someone goes over to them and says, ask them, what's the best book? And they just say that book that was on top one. Like, would they be a crazy person for doing that?
Well, no, and I think going back to our non-anonymized survey, I reckon that's going to happen quite a bit. People are going to be like, oh, crap, I haven't gotten around to watching The Godfather, but I'm pretty sure it's the best movie of all time.
Yeah.
Godfather, Citizen Kane, 2001 A Space Odyssey. Like, fuck, I've only ever watched The Avengers, but I can't put that.
Right, yeah.
I think if our list is going to be any good, we can't let people put books they haven't read. That doesn't make any sense.
So then it would be like almost nonsensical, you think, for someone to answer with a book they haven't read?
No, they're technically correct that if they're like, yeah, it's Ulysses, it's been on the number one, I haven't read it, sounds really complicated, then I would ask them, I would just follow that up with like, what's the best book you've ever read? Because if I'm asking them about it, I'm asking for either their opinion on the book, I'm trying to start a conversation, I'm really bored, I don't know, like something. But I probably wasn't looking for a literally correct answer to that question. They're not crazy for answering it that way, because it could have seemed a lot like that if they just spent all afternoon looking at best books lists, or had recently listened to a philosophy podcast about such a thing and decided to look up best books lists and then knew the correct answer. They're not crazy for doing that, but it's probably not. I would then rephrase the question.
Yeah, because it's not the answer you wanted, right? Which it kind of implies that the question is asking, which one do you love the most? Which one do you like the most? Which one's your favorite? Which maybe, Logan, you're right, going back to the start. At some point earlier. Yeah. The best is really what we're asking is your favorite. And if you tell me something else, I have nothing to work with. To continue the conversation.
I'm just curious. So for you all, not thinking about the general public anymore, is your favorite movie, also the best movie you've ever seen. Same with book, music. If I were to ask you those two questions phrased in those two different ways, would you give me the same answer? I can say for me, they are different.
Yeah, I think it's easy for me to answer my favorite movie, or like I can like think about it pretty easy. But as soon as I started asking about the best one, now I start thinking about like other things beyond what did I like the most. So I think there's different answers.
So is it just that we are crazy people that overthink this, and that normal-minded people are just going to say their favorite?
Or I'm a little too quick to assume that my subjective experience is the same as the objective experience. And I'm way more likely to say, I would answer those the same, those two questions the same. Those answers will change day to day. Or like how often, if you were to ask me what my favorite book is versus the best book I ever read, if you ask me that question back to back, I'll give you the same answer twice. But if you ask me in a year, it'll be different, or it might be different, because, well, one, that happened, and two, I think I've got like a handful, and it basically depends on which one I've read most recently. Yeah, so you might not be crazy. That might be the appropriate response, is to take some other, like an impartial spectator position on it, but I'm not going to. I mean, here's a question, just out of curiosity. If someone you don't know comes across you and during the course of conversation realizes you're well-read, and they ask you, what book would you recommend for me? What would you answer?
I have to know what they like first.
Yeah, I would need some additional.
Let's say that they're like, I've read a lot of classics. I want to read a really great book. What would you recommend?
What's your favorite book?
Oh, before you answered?
Yeah. That way I could be of some use to them, and not just, otherwise I'm just expecting that they're asking me, or assuming that they're asking me for my favorite book.
Okay. Then what would you do?
I would short circuit, steam would start coming out of my ears.
That's funny. I would tell them to read Crime and Punishment. That's my go-to book that I think, if you like books, if you like that, no one who I've recommended to who has read that book has disliked that book. In fact, I've never met someone who read that book who disliked that book. So that's my go-to. Easy. But it does make sense to ask for their favorite. Good strategy.
I probably need to head out, but this was fun.
Yeah.
Not sure where we landed, but this was a very interesting.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. Very fun.
I wonder if it'll end up on the top 100
best podcast of all time
episodes.
I don't know. Bo, are you heading out too? Or stick around?
I was planning on heading out. What are you doing?
I could stick around, but if you're gone, I'm not going to do it alone.
You'll probably get a lot more, make a lot more progress without other, me and Ben here.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the next hour of this podcast just being a monologue.
Yeah, I think
all right, cool.
Been good, gentlemen.
Good talk, boys.
Peace.
Thanks for coming to Philosophy Club. This episode was produced and edited, and its music was created by our super talented friend, Sam Roller.